Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's edition of Welcome to Matlanta. We appreciate you guys making us your weekly destination to catch up with some of our favorite Atlanta and Georgia guests, both past and present. Let's not waste any time. Let's get to this week's edition of Welcome to Atlanta. So as we're recording this today on Friday, it's a sad way to start this because I wanted to talk all about Ned Yost, and we will, and his career and his time with the Braves. But Ned, we got the word earlier on the passing of Henry Aaron, who is as legendary and mythical a figure as the game has ever seen. And we were spoiled to have him in our city. And I'm sure for you and a lot of guys in the organization, you got to know him on a personal level. So what are some of your memories and remembrances of being around Henry Aaron?
Well, you know, we'll start. You said it from the beginning. You wanted to talk to me about my career with the Braves. Well, I wouldn't have a career with the Braves if it wasn't for Hank Aaron. So when I was with the Montreal Expos in spring training, at the end of spring came along and I got released. So I went home, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was 31 years old and didn't want to bounce around between AAA and the big leagues at that time. Didn't have a job and was home about 2.5 weeks. And I was out. I came home and my wife says, "Hey, you got a phone call today." And I said, "Really? From who?" She said, "Hank Aaron." So I'm like, "Yeah, come on. You know, which one of my friends is messing around here?" So anyway, the next day, the phone rings again, and I was home. It was Hank. And Hank was the farm director for the Atlanta Braves at the time and was checking to see if I'd be interested in becoming a coach. He said that they had some very special young pitching prospects in AA, and they were looking for an experienced catcher to go help mentor them. The young pitching prospects were Pete Smith, Tommy Glavine, Kent Merker, Tommy Green, had all the kids that, you know, were the start of this great run that the Braves had also on that team. They had Jeff Blauser, David Justice, Ronnie Gant, Mark Lemke. It was a phenomenal young group of talented players. So, you know, I thought to myself, well, I'll give it a try. I always thought about coaching, and if I don't like it, it's in Greenville, South Carolina. It's only, you know, I lived in Jackson, Mississippi at the time. It's a close little run. You know, I could just say thanks, no thanks. But, of course, when you got there and you realized the talent that was there, it was just, I mean, I absolutely loved it. So I did that for a couple of years, bounced between AA and AAA for a couple of years, and then told Hank, look, I want to get into managing. I don't want to be a kind of like a player coach anymore because I was playing, I was coaching, but I enjoyed the coaching more than I did the playing at that time. So Hank ended up giving me the job at Sumter, South Carolina, low A ball. And I'll never forget Hank telling me, you know, when I took that job, he said, look, he said, you know, I am the farm director and I'm going to run the farm, you know, farm teams, you know, me and Bobby Dews. And he said, but if you don't hear from me, that means you're doing good. All right. The only time you're going to hear from me is if you're messing up or you did something wrong. So I said, okay, Hank. I didn't hear from Hank for 3 years. So, you know, every time Hank would come in or we would go to spring training, you know, he would come and find me and we would sit down and talk. I mean, it was unbelievable. The opportunity that he gave me. And then after 3 years of managing in the minor leagues, Bobby hired me to be the bullpen coach. I mean, that's another story because when that happened, you know, Bobby called me and said, hey, Phil Negro's the bullpen coach, but we want Phil to manage AAA. And if he takes the AAA job, because Phil wants to manage, we're going to give you the bullpen coach job. So Of course, you know, I waited on pins and needles for about a week, and Phil decided he would take the AAA job. So that's when my major league coaching career started with the Braves. So, you know, I've been touched by all three of these people between Nuxie, Hank, and Don Sutton. You know, I played with Don Sutton. I was on that Brewer team when Don Sutton came over in 82. So this has been, you know, a rough January, I think, for all the Braves fans. We've left three beloved, you know, people in this Braves organization that, you know, are a huge, huge part of this organization.
No, I think you said it perfectly. I mean, Braves country for anybody, and for you working with Hank, you know, for a lot of us in the media, getting lucky enough to meet these folks. The one thing I'll say, Ned, is they're all good baseball people and incredible players, and we know that. But the gentlemen that these guys were was always, to me, because they had every reason to be, you know, standoffish, or, you know, their career, your Hall of Fame speaks for itself. I never got that vibe from any of those three.
None of them. And you know what's crazy? And again, for me, I've seen it evolve. You know, my wife and I were watching, I can't get enough of Ken Burns' baseball documentary. And we were watching last night, you know, they were bouncing back and forth between the Negro Leagues and the teams of the 30s and the 40s and the great Yankee teams and stuff. But all of those players had blue-collar makeup. They, you know, they all worked other jobs. They weren't making any money. They were all humble, hardworking, you know, people. And the game's changed in that respect now. You know, it's a different generation of players, you know, that are playing Major League Baseball. They're no less talented. They're extremely talented, but they've grown up with cell phones and computers and video games, where, you know, the rest of these guys were in cornfields and working other jobs. You know, it's just a different group. But, you know, Hank and Don Sutton and Nuxie all, you know, came from that hardworking, very humble, blue-collar work ethic that made them so great.
Ned, I don't want to neglect your playing career, but I thought you said something really interesting. Did you say you had interest or maybe liked the idea of coaching more than playing?
Well, at that time, I did. I loved it. First of all, you know, I wish I could sit back now after. I mean, I played for 7 years. I coached in the minor leagues for 5 years, a major league coach for 12 years, and then a major league manager for close to 17 years. I wish I could go back to day one. I would be such a better player. I'm so much smarter than I was when I played. I could kick myself in the rear end. But, you know, we didn't have coaching when I played like we did now. You know, when I played, when you got to the big leagues, you were expected to know how to play. And if you didn't know how to play, they sent your tail back to AAA or back to the minor leagues. And it's not like that today. There's a lot of development at the big league level. There's a lot of give and take up there now. And there's a lot of teaching the game at that level. But, you know, I was always a backup player. You know, I had some talent and ability, mostly on the defensive side. But I always knew that, you know, I thought, because at that time, you know, I went to junior college for 2 years, and my major was baseball. I would just did anything I could do to get by just to play baseball. So I didn't really feel like I was prepared to do anything outside of baseball. Baseball had been my life. I didn't feel like, you know, I could go into the business world or you know, I'd have to, you know, I worked some, you know, in freight docks when I was coming up. I worked some with a forestry company, you know, managing timber. And but what I knew was baseball. So I knew at that point that, you know, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to probably coach when I was done playing, because that's what I, you know, that's what I knew. You know, when I went into that, I realized really quick that I was probably going to be a better coach than I was a player. And during that time, I think the smartest thing that I did, though, the 5 years was great for me, because I had great managers in Jim Beachum. I was with Leo Mazzoni in the minor leagues. He was a pitching coach for a couple of years. You know, for my second year as a player coach, and you know, had great mentors or people that would you know, watch over when I was managing. You know, our Rovers would come in and they were tremendous help. But you know, when I got the major league job is when I really started to understand what this game was about. And I think the smartest thing that I ever did when I got that job is I made a point to tell myself that I was going to watch everything Bobby Cox did. Everything that he did, I was going to watch and pay attention to. I was going to work my tail off for him, and I was going to watch him for 12 years being with Bobby, 8 years as a bullpen coach, 4 years as a third base coach, was the best experience anybody could get to become a major league manager. Because for 8 years, I was down in the bullpen with the likes of Greg Maddux, Tommy Glavine, John Smoltz, all those great relievers. I caught every side session that they had. So for 8 years, I paid attention to everything that they did on the pitching side. I paid attention to the way Bobby handled pitching staffs and how to run a game pitching-wise for 8 years. I was, you know, and then if I didn't understand why he did something, the next day we would sit there and have a cup of coffee, and I'd ask him, you know, what was your thought behind that? So that set me up on the pitching side. The 4 years as a third base coach, you know, set me up on understanding how to run a game. And, you know, I got to where I was thinking with Bobby. You know, I knew exactly what he was going to do before he was going to do it. And, you know, I would watch situations with him, how he made lineups, how he, you know, how he handled players through adverse situations, through, you know, exciting situations, through successful situations. I watched everything that he did and how he handled everything. So that when I got my opportunity to manage a Major League Baseball, I could fall back on all that unbelievable experience that I got as a Brave. So, I mean, it was, you know, starting from Hank and, you know, going in with Bobby at that point, it was just, you know, it was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life.
That's fascinating. I mean, tell me more about Bobby, though, because I've had several different, you know, players and former coaches. Leo Mazzoni tells some great tales, the player perspective as well, but they always seem to sort of put it in the context of, yes, he treated us like grown men, but there was a hard edge to Bobby, and he had a strong expectation of what he wanted from you. What was his relationship like with the other coaches from your perspective?
Oh, it was phenomenal. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, there were times – and I tried to do this, you know, especially when I was coaching third base, I wanted to be real aggressive. I wanted to make, you know, the opposition. After watching Jimmy Williams for, you know, so long at third base, and Jimmy was aggressive. And so when I took over, I wanted to be aggressive. And there were times, you know, I kept notes on everything. I kept notes on which pitchers pick off at second, you know, which pitchers you will, because there's some pitchers that won't. And if you could get that extra step, you know, that would be beneficial, because you see how many bang-bang plays are our home plate. So I would keep notes on that. I would keep notes on every outfielder's arm, ball to the left, ball to the right, balls right at them. How do they throw? Are they accurate? Can I test them? Can I run with them? And I would test every one of them until they threw me out. And then I'd take notes. All right, he threw me out on this here. And I started to understand it better. But there were times when I would get guys thrown out of home plate by 15 feet. And you're looking for a hole to crawl in, you know, at that time in the third base box. And then you run in the dugout and you feel like an idiot. And there's Bobby Cox waiting for you. And you say, nice job, Ned. I'd have sent him two. Way to go. I'd have sent him two. And, you know, it just, even though you knew he was lying to you, it made you feel better, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
It made you feel better. And it was, you know, I loved every day we would sit before the game. And I don't know, you know, the little computer room there next to the dugout.
Yeah,
there
with the Doppler, with the radar. Bobby would sit with the radar.
Sit down there, right? So every day as soon as BP was over, I'd get dressed, take a quick shower, and I'd bring down two cups of coffee, and we would sit there and drink coffee. And when I was, especially a third base coach, And I would absolutely love that time with Bobby, just sitting in there. And, you know, we had there would always be somebody special to come by and say hello to him. We talked about Ken Burns. Ken Burns came by. Cuba Gooding Jr. came by. There were so many dignitaries that wanted to come by and say hi to Bobby. And we're sitting there having coffee. We would sit when we go to Houston, and George Bush, the older George Bush, would come down, and below that dugout, there's a tunnel. We would sit on the ground in the tunnel drinking coffee for a half hour talking to, you know, George Bush. I mean, some of these, because they all love Bobby. And I'll never forget one time we were in Arizona, and we were sitting down there having our coffee. And, you know, we were just talking and laughing and talking, and all of a sudden it got real quiet, and I'm like, what's going on? And I got up and I looked around the corner. They had already, the pitcher had warmed up. They had thrown down the second, and they were waiting for 2 minutes for the third base coach, which was me, to get to third base. And I went, holy cow. I jumped off, and Bobby goes, what's wrong? What's wrong? I sprinted to the third base box. Everybody was clapping, right? Everybody in the stadium was like, yeah. They thought I, you know, I kept thinking about, they must have thought I got stuck in the bathroom or something. They didn't have any idea. I was enjoying having the time of my life with my manager having a cup of coffee. But, you know, we would sit there and we would drink coffee. And then during the game, you know, I'd run up four or five times and, you know, I'd get a half a cup of coffee and I'd bring Bobby back a half a cup of coffee. And I'll never forget one time Leo came up to me and he goes, will you stop bringing Bobby coffee? He's wearing me out. You know, Bobby would get all hyped up on the coffee. And if somebody made a bad pitch, oh, Bobby was in Leo's ear. And I just laughed and ran up and got Bobby another cup of coffee.
I want to talk about one of our great sponsors at the Rhodes Group. Yes, my buddy Clayton Rhodes and the Rhodes Group are a proud sponsor of us here at Welcome to Atlanta. And they're also my insurance company. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago now that I finally realized, why am I paying so much for my home and car insurance? I don't think we realize as the consumer we should be shopping or having somebody in a professional setting shop those rates for us. So I had the professionals at the Rhodes Group shop my rates, and they ended up saving me a boatload of money. I'm talking about $2,000 for my home and car insurance. By now, you guys know it's a great time to refinance your home. You see all those rates. Well, you might not know it's also a great time to shop your home insurance. Home insurance rates creep up every year, and the only way to get the best policy and the best rate is to work with an independent insurance agency like the Rhodes Group. Here's the deal. You can get up to 10 insurance quotes in 10 minutes from the Rhodes Group at no cost to you. You want to visit them online? I got a special landing page for you. You can go to rhodes-group.com/churnoff. It's spelled R-H-O-A-D-S. rhodes-group.com/churnoff. You can also see the link up at Real Matt Lanna on Twitter. They're my insurance company. They're going to do this at no cost to you, and you're going to end up saving a boatload. The Rhodes Group is the answer to saving money and getting the best in insurance coverage. Again, the Rhodes Group is the place you want to go. Tell them Matt sent you. Go to rhodes-group.com/churnoff.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you? 3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.
So, I love it. That's I hear the love you have for the Braves and the game, but the way it was always described to me was nobody loved the game of baseball more than Bobby Cox. There's a reason he spent so much time at the ballpark.
Yeah. Well, man, it's not only the game, you know, that Bobby loved. Bobby loved the people around the game. Bobby loved talking to the reporters. You know, Bobby, if you walked with Bobby, and there would be times on day games or days where he would come over and pick me up and we would drive to the ballpark together. And he would get in the tunnel, I mean, in the tunnel at the old stadium, in the parking lot at the new stadium, and he would say hi to everybody. And he knew everybody by name. Everybody, the security people in the tunnel, he knew every one of them by name, and he would stop and speak to them. They loved him because he took the time to know them, ask about them, and he did that with everybody. I mean, absolutely everybody. And that was, you know, somebody told me one time, if you want to be successful in a field, find somebody who's the most successful in that field and do everything exactly the way that he does. Well, I thought, how much better can I do? But I couldn't even be Bobby. You know, I couldn't do that. That's not in my personality to, you know, be as kind and respectful to everybody that I see that Bobby Cox was. And I tried, and then there were times when we had tough games, I couldn't do it, but Bobby did it. You know, Bobby would never hold grudges with players. If he got mad at you, he would be – the one thing that I never took from Bobby, I think, was that we would play games, and then if we lost a game and something happened, he would go in his office, and it would explode. I mean, stuff was flying against the wall, and you could hear stuff. He'd be screaming and coffee mugs, and I walked in the next day. There was a coffee cup handle sticking out of the wall. He had fired it through the wall. But the next day, he would come in just like nothing ever happened. And, you know, he was just the experience of watching him in these situations was invaluable to me. We played a game one time in St. Louis, and we had a one-run lead in the ninth inning. They had runners at second and third and two outs, and Mike Stanton was pitching. And Stanton was facing a left-hander. I mean, you're thinking to yourself, okay, this game's over. Guy hits a rollover ground ball to the first baseman, right? I'm like, this game's over. Well, I look up, Stanton's late to the bag. So Stanton, the batter, beat Stanton to the bag. That's the tying run. Stanton understood that he was late to the bag and started feeling sorry for him. The winning run scored, right?
I remember this.
We go in that locker room, and Bobby is some kind of livid. I mean, he is in his office, and in that office at the old stadium, it was just like, it didn't really have like a roof. You know, it had just like walls up there so you could hear everything going on. And he was screaming and yelling and going nuts. And we were all sitting, you know, we sat down. I mean, we could hardly believe what happened to begin with. But after like 5 minutes of him erupting in there, he door flew up and he goes, "Stanton, get in here." So we're like, oh man, it's fixing to hit now. So we're all sitting there kind of listening, right? Stanton walks in, slams the door behind him. So we're listening for like 5 minutes. We didn't hear nothing. And all of a sudden, you know, the door opens up and Stanton walks out. So the next day we're all sitting in the bullpen, and we had a tight group down there, right? So we were kind of laughing at it at that time. I'm like, what happened when you went in there? He goes, man, I was scared to death. He said, I went in there, Bobby told me to sit down. And I sat down right across from his desk, right? And I'm sitting there. I've got my head hanging down, right? And I'm waiting for him to start to yell at me. And I'm waiting for 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I look up, and Bobby's staring at me. I mean, daggers coming out of his eye. He said, I kind of shook a little bit and put my head back down again and waited for a minute. He said, I waited two more minutes, and I looked up, and Bobby's staring at me again. And I said, I put my head back down again, and I keep thinking to myself, when's he going to yell at me? And I'm sitting here, and after about a minute, I looked up at him, and Bobby looked at me, and he goes, Mike, don't ever do that again. And Stanton goes, Bobby, trust me, that'll never happen again. He goes, okay, get out of here. But that was Bobby Cox. You know, that was Bobby Cox. He never held a grudge. He never, you know, situations, he made his point. It wasn't going to happen again. And, you know, the players respected him for it. You know, I would ask him, there were times players that would be hitting second, third, fourth, or fifth that would be really struggling. I mean, they'd be struggling for like a week or 10 days. And, I mean, I got to the point where I'm like, Bobby, are you going to move him up and down the lineup? And he goes, let me tell you my philosophy on that. I said, okay. He said, when I've got a player and he's hitting second, third, fourth, or fifth, he's generally one of my better players. And I said, yeah, and he's struggling. And I said, I will go to the point to where I think I need to move him. And he said, sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's 10 days, sometimes it's 2 weeks. And he said, when I get to the point where I think I'm going to move him, I wait another week. And always within that week, they pull out of it and they're right back to who they were. So you don't disrupt their confidence. You don't disrupt who they are. It's everything stays, settled and everybody's, in the right frame of mind. It doesn't disrupt anything. You know, I use that philosophy so many times that it worked every time for me too. So, the lessons to be able to be with him, for all those years was set me up for 17 years of managing. And, the first part of understanding what it was like, because when I came in 91 and 90, the Braves had, were in dead last place and drew 850,000 fans. They didn't even draw a million fans.
Right.
And then, of course, in 91, here we go. We're in the World Series, right? But you could see that these young kids that I had in Greenville, the Blousers, the Justices and those kids, it generally takes them 2.5 years. And I learned this, 2.5 years for them to get to the big leagues before, they start to take off, especially talented kids. I remember Tommy Glavine losing his 17th game, a Hall of Famer crying in his locker. 17 games he lost, at the big league level. After 2.5 years, these kids all of a sudden, boom, they grew together, and then they put together, 14 consecutive division championships. It was the same way in Milwaukee. After 2.5 years, our kids started to come on, and we were primed to be in the playoffs. In Kansas City, it was 2.5 years before that great group of kids got to where they could compete for a world championship.
Do you think people have the patience, though, anymore, Ned? Like, what happened with the Braves, and you hit it perfectly. People don't want to remember when Glavine and Smoltz came up and struggled and young players found their way. I mean, 3 or 4 years to give players time these days, I just don't know if teams have that patience.
Well, that's the problem. That's the trap that you run into. If you're going to rebuild, you have to rebuild. And here, the philosophy behind rebuilding, and you can look at this right now and put this in context of where the Braves are right now. It's going to take 2.5 years. Now, managers will come in there, and this is where Snit has done such a fantastic job, right? Managers will come in, and especially on teams that are rebuilding and that are losing a lot of games. We got to develop a winning attitude. Well, here's the problem with that. Players, when you sign a professional player, every single professional player that signs has a winning attitude. Every one of them. The problem that they have is that not all of them are talented, but they all have the same attitude to win. So when you are developing a team, hopefully to develop it into a championship caliber team, those 2.5 years are crucial that you develop not a winning attitude, but a positive attitude, that you stay positive with these guys no matter what. Because depending on their talent level, they're going to give you everything that they got. But some players just aren't talented enough to be successful and put together great years. Now, if you continue to pound them with winning attitude, they're going to press. And when they press, it makes it worse. It stifles their natural ability, and it's actually going to be worse than if you just understand, hey, go out every day, give us your best, whatever it is. If it's 0 for 4, okay. If it's 4 for 4, okay. Just look in the mirror when the day's over and look yourself in the eye and say to yourself, did I give my best effort today? And if you did, then you can take a shower, go home, and be ready to play the next day. Now, after 2.5 years, it's like I said, it's been my experience, these guys all of a sudden start to understand, hey, I've been through every situation. I've gotten to the point where I think I can win. Now it builds into where I know I can win, and they take off. That's where we were in 14. You know, we thought we could win until the playoffs started. Then we understood, okay, we can win. And we lost the World Series by 90 feet. I mean, 90 feet. And then, of course, the next year we had a great year and won the World Championship in 15. Now, you take that in context of where the Braves are right now. they have gotten those 2.5 years or those 2 years where those young players have come together. You have young pitching that's extremely talented. You've got young position players that are extremely talented, and they took it within one game of the World Series last year. Trust me, when they come to spring training this year, they know that they can go to the World Series and win it. They're ready to go. This is why this year is going to be so exciting, I think, for every Braves fan, is that they're at a point in their organizational development where they are ready to compete for a world championship. And I, for one, am extremely excited to see how they do.
Ned, let me ask you a couple of things here, because I want to talk to you about the Royals championship. But you got to experience, as you said, from 91, even in the minors, the growth of that young group coming together, the addition of Pendleton and Bream, and everything took off. I always love to try to have somebody like you put this into words for me. Going through the ups and downs of the early 90s, the painful loss in 91, losing to Toronto, and then finally in 95 winning a title. Can you put into words what it's like at that moment or right after winning a championship?
You can't. I don't think you can. I just remember I remember coming so close, in 91. We had that where Bobby put on a hit and run and Lonnie Smith took off and Pendleton hit the ball off the wall and Lonnie kind of lost the ball and got hung up a little bit. That would have been the run that we needed. But we still had the bases loaded, nobody out, and we couldn't score in game 7 of that situation. So that kind of softened that blow a little bit. But, what it does is in 91, 92, go to the World Series. 93, we missed out. 94 was a strike year. But when you get to the World Series, you feel like you're climbing Mount Everest and you've got your oxygen on, you're exhausted. You get to that point and you can see the summit. I mean, you are 20 feet from the summit, which is a huge goal, climbing Mount Everest. And then when you lose that World Series, it's like somebody came up behind you, kicked you on the butt, and you rolled all the way back down. And then you sit there and think, man, I got to make that journey again next year. I was so close. I was so close, but I'm going to have to make that journey. And it's a hard journey. 161 games and or whatever it is, 162 games. And, you got to go through that just for a chance to get to the playoffs. But, in 95, when we ended up going to the World Series with Cleveland, I think we won the first two games, went to Cleveland for game 3 and ended up losing. And then in game 4, we ended up I think Steve Avey threw a phenomenal game, and I'll never forget. I never thought about it. I was so focused at that time walking up the steps in Cleveland with Jeff Blauser, and Blauser looked at me and goes, hey, we're going to win the World Series. And that was the first time that it hit me. I'm like, yeah, we're up 3-1. We are going to win the World Series, right? So the next day, I was so excited because we had Greg Maddux in the mound, and I went down to warm him up. And, Ray Charles could have warmed up Greg Maddux that day. You put the glove, he was hitting it. Right? You didn't even need to open your eyes. Wherever you put the glove, he was pinpointed. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, man, he's going to throw a no-hitter today. So we get out there. First inning starts up. We don't score. Greg goes out there and gives up 5 runs. I'm like, oh, man, we're bringing it back to Atlanta. So now doubt starts to creep in your mind a little bit. Okay, if they win today, now it's all tied. We got to go to game 7. So we were, getting ready for the game. And I'll never forget, I would help Clarence Jones, who was a hitting coach. And there were times where I would go down to the cage and I would do soft toss drills because, the hardest job in baseball, I think, is the hitting coach, because you got to throw BP to 14 guys. You got to get them ready for the game. And nowadays it's even worse. And I think baseball's gotten smart. They've got 2 hitting coaches now. But back then they just had 1. So CJ needed help. So I would go in and, I would soft toss with David Justice and 3 or 4 guys. So, I kept noticing David's front knee was flying open just a little bit. And I said, look, keep your knee closed, because when your knee flies open, your hips fly open and you lose your power. So in the cage, he started lining balls pretty good, and David was being David, players were coming by, he was talking, and I'm starting to like, David, pay attention to what we're doing here. But Dave was just, you know, such a talented player. We got done with it, and I went down to the cage, and David, I think at that point, was struggling a little bit, and Bobby goes, man, we need David to get going. I said, Bobby, you wait. You watch David and BP today. You're going to feel better. I think we found something. Bobby goes, all right. BP started. I don't think David hit two balls out of the cage. Right? So Bobby goes, oh, what are we going to do? I said, he's going to be fine. Well, sure enough, in the sixth inning, David hits the home run to give us a one-run lead that we eventually ended up. But I'll never forget, Glavin just rolling through him like that. And, end of eight innings, Glavin's giving up one hit, and you're sitting down in the bullpen, and you know you got a one-run game. You got one inning left to go to everything that you've ever thought about or ever dreamed about happening was about to happen. So, I mean, all the work that you've ever put in to become a baseball player, I mean, your fondest goal is, winning a world championship. And this would have been my fourth try at it. I was, in the World Series in 82. We lost game 7 to St. Louis. And then, of course, lost game 7 in 91 and game 6 in 92. And we were so close. So my heart was pounding, and I wasn't, I was just thinking Tommy Glavin. He was at 90-something pitches, and the phone rang, and, I'm like, why is the phone ringing? I pick it up with Bobby. He goes, Woolers is in the game. And I said, what? He goes, Tommy's done. Tommy's given it everything he's got. Woolers our closer. It's Woe's game. I'm like, okay. So I turned and I said, Woe, you're in. And Woolers goes, what? I said, you're in. Let's go. So Woolers got up and he started warming up, and I'm watching him, and I'm looking at his neck, and his vein boom 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 is pounding in his neck. I'm like, man, calm down, come on, he's firing the ball, he's firing it. And I kind of looking at the lineup, and I'm going over the lineup, and I go, ugh, I don't want to tell you this. I just said this to myself. I said, okay, your first hitter is going to be Kenny Lofton. Look, you're going to have to bounce off that mound. He can bunt, if he gets on first base, he's running, so you're going to have to keep your eye on him. So just attack him with your best stuff, Okay. So I'm thinking, man, if he gets on, he's going to steal second, he's going to steal third, and this game's going to be tied up before you know it. So sure enough, Woe gets out there, and I think first pitch was a strike. I'm like, oh, okay. Second pitch was a ball. Third pitch was a ball. Fourth pitch was a ball that was way inside that somehow Kenny Lofton swung at and hit a little blooper down the third base line. And I'm thinking, well, at least good. The count's 2-2. And out of nowhere, Rafael Belliard came flying like Superman and caught that ball. And when Ralphie caught that ball to retire Kenny Lofton, I started jumping up and down, both on the outside and on the inside of my body, because I knew that the biggest threat for them to score had just made an out. And sure enough, boom, another out, the third out, fly ball to to Marquise Grissom in center field. As soon as that ball was hit, I looked up, I looked at grip, I looked at the ball, knew that he had it, and I took off. I was going to be on that mound, right? And by the time he caught that ball, I think I was on the playing field headed to the mound. And I'll never forget the feeling that night in the locker room to becoming a world champion, that everything that we had ever worked for had finally come together and we had accomplished something great. I never understood how great it was because I was the bullpen coach, right? But for Bobby, it's unbelievable. And I finally understood what it was like to win a world championship in 15 in Kansas City. And when we got done, at this point, in 15 was my eighth World Series. So I had been there. I had been through the champagne sprays. I had been through it all. So, when we, in 2015, when we won against Houston, they gave us a great battle. But, they had the champagne. My coaches came in. You're going to spray champagne? Nah. I'm going to wait till we win the World Series. So we ended up playing Toronto, ended up beating them. Are you going to come spray champagne? No, I'm going to wait till we get to the World Series. We beat the Mets, right? The Mets were there. So anyway, game 5, I remember we were in the 12th inning and we were tied. you know, Eric Hosmer made that daring dash in the ninth inning to tie us up, and we got a runner, Jerron Dyson at second base. Christian Colon gets a base hit to give us a lead. And then all of a sudden, at that point, we were ahead 3-2, but the guys just kept hitting, right? We ended up spending, and I remember telling myself, will somebody make an out so we can get this thing over? I want to get this thing over. And finally, you know, we made an out, went out, and got them out 1-2-3. And the celebration was fantastic to the point where the Mets finally kicked us out of the stadium at 5 o'clock in the morning. They said, you got to go home, you know. So by the time we went home, we went in, I mean, before that, let me back up. Before that, we, you know, everybody gets in the locker room, and we were told nobody can spray champagne till the commissioner leaves. So the commissioner came in, gave Mr. Glass the championship trophy. He did his interview. I did my interview on national TV. The commissioner left, and, of course, I walked out, and all the guys went nuts spraying champagne, and I just sat down in my office. And I looked up, and there was my GM, Dayton Moore, sitting on the couch. And we just looked at each other and smiled. You know, I think for us, we had gone through so much. I mean, we had gone from losing 100 games to complete rebuild to winning a world championship. And, you know, we just looked at each other and smiled. I think we just felt fulfilled. I don't think we felt overjoyed. I just think we felt satisfied. And, you know, by the time we left out of there at 5 o'clock in the morning, I probably had more champagne and other things that I normally don't drink. So by the time I found myself back at the hotel at 6 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't sleep. Our bus was leaving at 10 o'clock that day. So my family was there. I walked across the street to Starbucks. I got everybody coffee, and I started trying to pound coffee to feel a little better. Got on the bus, got on the plane, and I got up to first class, and of course, had, you know, all my family got them settled, and I sat down, and my phone rang, and no caller ID. Well, the only two people that ever call me that have no caller ID are Robin Yount and Joe Torre. So I'm thinking, this must be Joe Torre. Congratulate me, right? So I answer the phone and said, hello, and they go, yes, is this Ned Yost? I said, yes. And he said, could you please hold for a call from the President of the United States? Oh. I'm like, whoa, okay. So it was Barack Obama calling to invite us to the White House. And we sat there and talked on the phone for 10 minutes. He was a White Sox fan. And we talked about the differences between what Kansas City did. And Josh Earnest, who was his press secretary, grew up in Kansas City, was a huge Kansas City fan. So, I mean, that's when I first understood what we did was fantastic. That, and then the next day when we had our parade and had 850,000 people, lined the streets in Kansas City for this celebration. And to this day, people thank me for winning a World Series. And I'm like, man, I mean, the impact that it had. And this was the same for Bobby. You know, the impact that it had on the fans is generally three generations. You've got your kids, you got your dads, you got your granddads. And they've all been rooting for this organization their whole life. So these memories that you make, you're making them for three generations. And they're memories that they'll never forget, the time that your team won a world championship. And, you know, that's when I started to understand the magnitude of accomplishing what we accomplished. And I never, ever dreamed that it would be that great.
I want to talk about one of our great sponsors at the Rhodes Group. Yes, my buddy Clayton Rhodes and the Rhodes Group are a proud sponsor of us here at Welcome to Atlanta, and they're also my insurance company. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago now that I finally realized, why am I paying so much for my home and car insurance? I don't think we realize as the consumer we should be shopping or having somebody in a professional setting shop those rates for us. So I had the professionals at the Rhodes Group shop my rates, and they ended up saving me a boatload of money. I'm talking about $2,000 for my home and car insurance. By now, you guys know it's a great time to refinance your home. You see all those rates. Well, you might not know it's also a great time to shop your home insurance. Home insurance rates creep up every year, and the only way to get the best policy and the best rate is to work with an independent insurance agency like the Rhodes Group. Here's the deal. You can get up to 10 insurance quotes in 10 minutes from the Rhodes Group at no cost to you. You want to visit them online. I got a special landing page for you. You can go to rhodes-group.com rhoads.com/churnoff. It's spelled R-H-O-A-D-S. rhoads.com/churnoff. You can also see the link up at Real Matt Lanna on Twitter. They're my insurance company. They're going to do this at no cost to you, and you're going to end up saving a boatload. The Rhoads Group is the answer to saving money and getting the best in insurance coverage. Again, the Rhoads Group is the place you want to go. Tell them Matt sent you. Go to rhoads-group.com/churnoff.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you? 3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.
That's amazing. Hey, Ned, let's finish up with this because this is a weird question. And the reason it's weird is you went to Kansas City after Milwaukee, and as you said, you won a championship. But the timing, man, it was so close to, you know, Bobby was retiring. The opportunity could have been there. Remind me, did that conversation ever come about with you in Atlanta? Do you have any regrets or thoughts that, wow, I could have been in Atlanta? Was that ever on the radar?
No. You know what was funny? It never was. I loved Atlanta, but I loved Dayton more. Dayton and I came up in Atlanta, and, you know, I believed in what he was doing. But here's a funny story. One of my best friends was Dale Earnhardt, and Dale and I were hunting together in Texas, and we would ride around in this high rack truck. And we would ride around all, you know, till lunchtime, go eat lunch, and then get back on it. And when we would ride around, we'd be looking for deer, but we'd be talking the whole time. And Dale at that point was, his contract was done, and he was trying to negotiate a new contract with Chevrolet and Richard Childress. And he had his own team at that time. So I asked him, I said, look, why don't you go to work for your own team? You got your own team. Why don't you drive for your own team? And he goes, we're not ready to win. And I said, really? He goes, yeah, I'm not ready. Well, they're not ready to win. He goes, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay with the winner. And I said, oh. And he looked at me and he said, that's what you do. And I said, what? He goes, that's what you do. He goes, you stay in Atlanta until Bobby retires, and you take over from Bobby. And I said, Dale, look, Bobby's not going to retire for another 10 years. If I'm going to get my opportunity, I got to do it before then. He grabbed me by the shirt, and he pulled me nose to nose with him, and he said, you never do that. You never leave a winner to go to a loser. Never do you do that. You understand me? You stay with that team till Bobby retires, and then when Bobby retires, you take over. That'll be a winning organization. He said, don't you go to a loser. You don't do it. You don't do it. And I told him, I said, I'm probably going to have to do it. And he goes, you don't. I mean, he was adamant. You do not do this. So I was with Atlanta when Dale died, and then a couple of years later, I got the opportunity to manage Milwaukee. And I remember when at my press conference, when they announced me as a manager, I put on that Brewer uniform. And I had, you know, I came up as a Brewer. I had great memories as a Brewer. So that, you know, that was the team that I first played in the big leagues with. So I was, you know, I felt good about it. But when I put on that uniform after being in a Braves uniform for 12 years, the first thing I thought about was Dale. And, I mean, I felt sick, to be honest with you. I'm like, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing? And then I just kept thinking, well, you know what? I gotta take this loser and build it into a winner. And I had a picture of Dale in my office, and it was one of those pictures that wherever you stand in the office, he's looking at you. And I would walk in, and I mean, we lost 93 games the first year. I would walk in and sit down after, you know, a game, and we were right in the beginning of our rebuild there, and our talent wasn't very good. You know, I'd look up, and he'd be staring at me, and I'm like, you know, what are you looking at? You know, I know what you said. But, you know, all these years, he was always in the back of my mind. And that's why I always took number 3 was, you know, because you know, he was such an inspiration to me. And when we won the World Series in 2015, I mean, I remember the first thought that went through my mind was, see, Dale, you're right. I went from a winner to a loser, but I built this loser into a winner, and I know you're proud of me. And I mean, that made you know, the world to me, and that's what it meant. But, you know, I would have, the timing just wasn't right for Atlanta. You know, it just wasn't. I loved Atlanta, but again, you know, when you go to Kansas City, you're going to find, and what I found out wherever you go, in Milwaukee, in Kansas City, you're going to have probably, I don't know, 65% of the people love you and 45% of the people hate you, you know? And I didn't want that in my hometown, you know? I didn't want that. So, you know, I knew that I would probably never get an opportunity, one, and if the opportunity came, I'd have to think hard about it.
Well, let's leave it right there, Ned. I kept you way too long. Those are unbelievable stories, and I can't thank you enough for sharing them. Continued success, continued health, and we'd love to talk to you again down the road. Thank you, Ned.
You got it. My pleasure.
Guys, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to the great folks at the Rhodes Group. Remember, the Rhodes Group is where you want to go to have them shop your insurance rates, both car and home. They did it for me at no cost. They will do it for you at no cost, and they can save you a bundle of money. You have nothing to lose and only something to gain with the Rhodes Group. You can go to the Rhodes Group, check out their great website. You can go to my Twitter page and find out the information there with a landing page right over to find out how they can get you 10 quotes as quickly as 10 minutes. Thanks to Brian Murphy for producing the podcast, and thanks to you guys for making us your weekly destination. We'll talk to you next week on Welcome to Madlanta.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit streets, see gangsters roaming, and parties don't stop till 8 in the morning.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit streets, see gangsters roaming, and parties don't stop till 8 in the morning.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you? 3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.